Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, December 21st, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. Oh, and the final Casual Friday live for the year. What will we be doing today? We'll be talking to Ben Dixon from the Benjamin Dixon Show. Also, Judy Gold will say goodbye to 2018. I have a feeling she's going to say something a little bit nastier to it. And then we're going to hear from Matthew Film Guy and Isabel Gillies to say goodbye to 2018, too. Guess I could have come up with something better than that. Meanwhile, Mad Dog Mattis takes a walk. Paul Ryan's last stand and a shutdown seems imminent. U.S. to withdraw half our troops from Afghanistan, falling on the heels of our withdrawal from Syria. Dems reject AOC's Green New Deal committee as Trump rolls out a plan to drill in Anwar. Meanwhile, Chuck Schumer feels the heat. Don't know if that's coming from the left in general or perhaps from maybe rumored primary against him in 2022, but he rejects the end of the year deal on judicial nominations. Mitch McConnell will have to start over in the beginning of the year. And as various Democrats in the Senate roll out drug price restrictions, Orrin Hatch on his way out says don't let anybody cap those prices. And it turns out the DOJ ethics division did tell Matt Whitaker to recuse himself. Meanwhile, would-be Attorney General Bill Barr may have a document problem. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. I got to tell you right up front, you know, when you contemplate the last Friday of the year, you think, okay, we're going to look back on the year. We'll do a recap of 2018, and yesterday I realized, like, we're going to have to do just a recap of Thursday, because we, never mind the week, we won't have time to recap the year.
Time's just, too dilated. Just
exactly. But, you know, there isn't anything that happened yesterday that isn't indicative of what's happened this year, right? It's just like every day is just almost a perfect metaphor. That is the one positive thing about Donald Trump. We'll talk about that with Ben Dixon.
Multiple worlds.
I just want to say a couple of things. We'll probably go into this a little bit towards the end of the show too, but I just want to thank our audience so much for the support. We've had a lot of growth this year, particularly on the YouTube side, and I just appreciate the audience that we have. Thank you to our members, of course, who make this show possible. Got an email from regular listener. Jonathan, who has set up a Goodreads group on Goodreads.com. We'll put a link to that. That's the Majority Report podcast Goodreads group. Has all the books from authors interviewed in 2018 plus Corey Pine's book and Eddie Gloud's book, and there could be other ones. And if you want to help out with that, go back into the archives and help populate the shelves, as it were, for past years. That would be great. And also, I just want to send a special shofar out. To a longtime supporter and listener, Janet, who has been incredibly generous over the years and have made this show possible. When we started back at 8 years ago now, almost to the month, well, maybe I guess it was October or November. I think for the first like 2 or 3 years, we wouldn't even allow year-long membership purchases because I was convinced that we would have to close every like, I was always like, well, we got 30 days. And thanks to everybody.
That's it.
It's over.
Pack it in.
Going to Mexico.
Going to Cancun and abandoning my family. Reading Social Security reports.
Actually sounds amazing.
That actually sounds pretty good.
Does that sound pretty good?
Yeah. One of today's sponsors is Skillshare. And the first 500 people, I can't guarantee there's 500 slots left. In fact, I'm quite sure there is not, but I can tell you there's probably under 100, but probably in the 70s or 80s, who go to skl.sh/majority are going to get 2 whole months of free, totally free access to Skillshare's entire library, super quality online courses and tutorials. Skillshare. Skillshare is a vibrant online learning community that offers courses on everything from design to video editing, photography, business, technology, cooking, meditation, everything in between. There are Skillshare courses for everyone. You'll have no problem finding courses that'll be useful to you both in your personal and professional life, whether you want to sharpen your skills with something you already love doing or you want to learn how to do something totally new. Skillshare has you covered. I'm literally thinking about stuff like I'm trying to make a list of stuff. We're going on vacation. I've got 9 days and have the kids only for a little more than half. But I feel like I'm just going to sit and just scroll through and pick out new things that I want to learn. They got courses in web development, personal nutrition, learning new languages, Photoshop, you name it. I've already told you I've gone through the chef's cutting one. I think I may pick up, I may take some other cooking courses. I have no idea. You get 2 entire months of free access to every single course offered by Skillshare by going to skl.sh/majority. Just think of everything you're going to have at your fingertips for 2 whole months. Again, that's skl.sh/majority. There's a link in the podcast description. There is a link below the YouTube description. Check it out. As you know, 2018 has been a difficult year for human rights. But have you ever wondered how rights abuses are documented around the world? You probably have. With the sheer volume of global crises we're seeing, from civilian casualties in Syria to ethnic cleansing in Myanmar to the caging of children on U.S. borders, it's critical that we expose the truth in order to defend the rights of all, bring those responsible to justice. Human Rights Watch does just that. They're an independent, nonprofit organization known for their accurate fact-finding, impartial reporting, and targeted advocacy, often in partnership with local activists and human rights groups. They accept no money from any government, but rely on the support of informed, dedicated people just like you. So if human rights are important to you, visit hrw.org/majority. Make a donation and support its vital work around the world. When you do, not only is your gift tax deductible, it will be matched dollar for dollar until 2019. That means your donation will go twice as far to advance justice and defend the basic dignity of people who need it most. Again, that's hrw.org/majority. All right, folks. As you know, the government is probably going to shut down. I'm not sure. I guess it's at midnight tonight. The House capitulated to Donald Trump. Paul Ryan just riding off into the sunset, slinking over his horse, I guess, past a $5 billion expenditure to build the wall, or what we're saying, the slatted wall. And, of course, we have every reason to believe this will not pass the Senate. And even if they were to get 50 votes, there's a good chance that the Democrats would filibuster it. In fact, I think there's every chance the Democrats would filibuster it. Then there's a chance that Mitch McConnell could nuke the filibuster. Personally, I say nuke the filibuster. Let's just do this. Let's let democracy dictate what happens in the Senate going forward. The filibuster has prevented a lot of progressive, forward-leaning legislation for years. It inhibited the ability for Democrats back in the late 70s and the early 80s to strengthen unions. Over time, the lack of a filibuster will, I think, help progressive causes.
The Green New Deal will appreciate it, I'm sure.
There's going to be a lot of stuff that hopefully President Bernie Sanders like. Or someone like that.
Who's like this? Can't copy this style.
Anyways, the point being, there's every reason to believe that the government's going to shut down, and it's hard to imagine when it's going to reopen. And we'll talk more about that later. But for now, there's an alternate plan to build the wall, and it involves a GoFundMe and literally 200,000 really, really gullible people who have contributed over $12 million of a $1 billion goal. But here is something I want to tell you about GoFundMe. Even if they don't reach that $1 billion goal, the guy who set up the GoFundMe gets to keep the money raised.
Sweet.
Now, I guess he could contribute it all to the U.S. government.
No, I think he should invent a new life for himself.
To build, you know, I guess, you know, $12 million. Let's say he raises $20 million. You know, you could build like 1% of the wall, maybe, probably less.
But we could do that old right-wing talking point. Like, you want the wall? You want your tax dollars? Go. Why don't you just write the federal government a check?
Yeah, right.
We're going to see how that works.
Build the wall. Yeah, why don't you do it instead of trying to coerce other people?
Like Brian Colfage, I think is his name. He is an Iraq War veteran. He is a triple amputee. Yeah, I mean, so this guy has definitely suffered. And it'll be interesting to see what he's going to do with his money. But he appeared on Laura Ingraham's show and has a very, very expansive view of the Constitution, let's say.
Nation, our country, we need security. We are a nation of laws. We need to enforce these laws. We can't have people coming across our border who are unchecked that we don't know who they are. I mean, we could have another terrorist attack tomorrow. It doesn't take many people to stage an attack. We need to know who's coming across that border, and we need to keep it in check. And this, like I said, this wall is in our Constitution. We need to have the wall, and
what do you mean the wall is in our Constitution? Where in the Constitution?
Well, you know what I mean? It's part of our nation. It's part of our laws.
I mean, you're talking about our sovereignty. Our sovereignty.
Yeah, sovereignty. Right? We're a nation of laws.
The wall itself is not in the Constitution.
Trump wall is not in the Constitution.
Yeah.
That's the vibe of it.
Yeah. Trump wall is not in the Constitution.
Don't back down.
It's not exactly in the Constitution.
Whoa.
But our sovereignty.
Big, beautiful thing.
I don't understand how we have been. So have we not been a sovereign country for the past 200 years?
Technically, no. And certainly ever
not
since
by
they
my
integrated
definition.
Has
water
anybody
fountains.
Picked up on that slight inconsistency that, like, we, I mean, if, we, how is it that we managed to maintain our sovereignty this entire time. And we've waged multiple wars.
That was because of the
And we've been able
bankers.
To do this despite the fact that we haven't had a wall.
Eleanor Roosevelt gave our sovereignty away. It's the UN. It's the UN and Eleanor Roosevelt.
But no, the Constitution does not call for a wall. And I don't even know. The Constitution does not call for us maintaining our sovereignty by keeping undocumented immigrants out.
Semantic samantha.
There you go.
What was her problem? Laura Ingraham just such a genuinely unpleasant person that she even has to trip up a guy on there to do a propaganda segment?
I'll tell you
her?
What I think it is. I think she realized, like, holy crap, this guy's going to make more money this year than I am.
You know a word that doesn't show up in the Constitution? Border.
Boom. Matt.
Matt with the control F.
It's going to be super interesting. Here's my prediction. That guy may go to prison. Definitely going to get sued. And he could be the guy who brings down GoFundMe. Because he's going to raise another $5 or $10 million. And
it's not GoFundMe's fault.
I got news for you. He ain't going to give that all to the U.S. government.
He should. Should be the
I got to get paid. I got to take the normal 75% fee for administration purposes.
Consultation.
Clearly, these people have never tried donating to a Kickstarter campaign.
This is pretty impressive.
Well, Kickstarter, it's the sort of thing where if the project doesn't reach its goal, you get your money back. So I think some people might be donating to this, assuming it's that dynamic.
Right, because it says $1 billion
goal.
Yeah, it's
like, oh, we're never going to get
but
that.
But like, what?
Like, they're raising a lot of money, but at the pace that they're going, it's still about 400 days away keeping up this level
of... I would
of,
just say in general.
To get to $1 billion.
To get to a billion. So they'll
yeah,
never
but billion's
get there.
Only a fifth of what Trump wants right. to build the wall, and that's not even enough.
Yeah, but they should definitely give their money to it. Like, I don't know why you guys are being negative.
I'll tell you
if
why I'm being negative.
Because
all I'm thinking about is, how did we not think of this?
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, yeah, but you're worried about going to prison.
And I will tell you this.
I
will also make this bet. There's five other ones out there that are probably doing like in the tens and 20s, 30,000s. And so we may get in on that. We'll keep you updated. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ben Dixon of The Ben Dixon Show. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure to welcome to the program the proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Ben Dixon. Welcome to the program, Ben.
Sam, thanks so much for having me, man. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks so much for doing this. I know you're on the road trying to get out of town, and yeah. I really appreciate I should also say also the relaunching the North Star with Sean King and where can people go to get more information on that again? The website?
BuildingTheNorthStar.com.
BuildingTheNorthStar.com. All right. And so, Ben, you know, I sent an email last night and I just mentioned this earlier, like, you know, the plan is you review the year at the last live show of the year. And basically, I don't think we even have time to review Thursday of this week.
Exactly.
But all right, let's just cut to the quick. The big story, of course, is Mattis and his resignation. Right. And, you know, this is I feel like this story captures every angle of what we've had to deal with under Trump. There's the angle of, oh, does this mean that we're going to get into a nuclear confrontation at this point? Or does it mean that we're going to pull out of NATO? Where should progressives be who might think that actually pulling out of Syria and Afghanistan, it's about time, but it's right. being done maybe in a haphazard way. And I'm not terribly thrilled about having generals all around him. And this administration's out of control. I mean, this seems to have every aspect of every story wrapped up into it.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here, and it's the perfect confluence of all of the madness that is the Trump administration. But it presents us with a unique problem, Sam. And the problem that I see here, actually, and maybe it's a problem, obviously, that I think will give us an opportunity for some clarity on the progressive side of the aisle. Because, yeah, I mean, all of us, none of us wanted this war in the first place, any of the wars that we're mired in. But then we do have to consider how this is being done, but more specifically, why it's being done. And those things actually have ramifications that could create more problems down the line. And so I think this is the opportunity, an unfortunate opportunity that we have as progressives to really examine what our foreign policy is in light of the existing conditions that we have in Syria, in Afghanistan, and particularly with the Trump administration. But I don't think that too many people are going to really dig into that nuance, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how much should we be worried? I mean, because it sort of feels like if something catastrophic doesn't happen with Donald Trump, I feel like Mattis is a huge a-hole because he went along with all this stuff. And for what point?
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is a very weird situation to be in that, you know, because I think there are stories that come out of the White House that say, you know, Mattis would take things off of Trump's desk or, you know, he was the one who was saying like, yeah, no, nuke's not a good idea or. But this is also a guy who was fired essentially from the Obama administration for being, you know, super excited about attacking Iran. So,
it's with that, just like with anything else, right? So, I mean, the stakes are clearly higher than with Attorney General Sessions, former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. You know, him leaving is not the opportunity for anyone to celebrate that person because they seem to be at odds with Donald Trump at this point. It's the same thing, except the stakes are a lot higher. Right. Jim Mattis leaving is not a statement that he is some type of honorable man. He was trash. There's a lot of things that he stood behind that obviously now, because we're not going to remain in Syria, you know, this is not an indication of character or goodwill. This is a guy who wants more conflict, but then it's okay with so much of the bigotry that the Trump administration has instituted in their foreign policy. So Mattis is not someone that we should welcome to the resistance. That being said, there were things that Mattis did do that potentially staved off nuclear disaster. So we have to walk and chew gum in a very complex fashion. But it's the same old oversimplified analyses that we're getting from anti-Trumpers and then the anti-Trumpers. It's the same mess every time.
It's also sort of impressive to watch, you know, all the former generals who go on cable news and they tell us that, you know, this guy's a Marine. He would never would never leave his post. And apparently he did. He did. I mean, he, at the very least, I mean, again, I'm of two minds here. I think it's a very good thing that we have, you know, that we encourage a tradition of people resigning in protest. I'm not sure that this is the protest I would want, right? Like, you know, I remember one ambassador, I think maybe to Italy or maybe not even Italy. I feel like it was like, I don't know, Monaco or something like that, that resigned during the Bush years. And I'm getting it wrong, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't make huge news. But this is something that should be happening. I'm not sure it should be happening because we're pulling 2,000 troops out of Syria, or,
right.
you know, I think, you know, maybe Mattis, I know one of the things Mattis has been concerned about is abandoning the Kurds. And that's certainly going to be a problem. Supposedly the Russians are going to come in and, you know, provide, you know, integrate them into the Syrian army or something and keep Turkey from coming in. I mean, this is who knows, but there's a very real potential for a slaughter of the Kurds.
Aspect of this that I really get frustrated with progressives on from the further left. Yes, it is noble to be pacifist. I get it. It is something to stay out of a war or not start a war in the first place. I think we all can 100% agree on that. But when you're mired in a situation and our number one allies, who the Kurds have been our number one allies in the fight against ISIS, to just kind of say, oh, it doesn't matter. Let them fight for themselves. We need to get out of there. Yeah, it really doesn't speak volumes in terms of actually it does. It speaks volumes in terms of the myopic view of foreign policy that progressives have. And I really need us to begin to develop a worldview, a foreign policy that is actually something that we can use in this current system. Like we have to start from somewhere and simply always saying no war whatsoever. That is noble, but we're literally stuck in a situation right now that Donald Trump's decisions probably will exacerbate war in the long run and will, in the short run, could lead to an all-out massacre. So I just don't know if the view that is being peddled right now is really a holistic one that can be tenable, something that can be useful in terms of actually accomplishing a progressive worldview. I think it's just an oversimplified approach to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, my sense is that, you know, you got to take reality as it is today, not where it should be, because we shouldn't have been in there in the first place, which I agree with. But when you're leaving, you have and there are parties there that want you to leave. You have a certain amount of leverage. And you use that leverage to perhaps figure out a way, or at least attempt a way, of providing some type of protection for those people who have been doing all the dying for your agenda. And I mean, obviously, they're for their own agenda. We'll see.
Can I just chime in and say that I agree with both of you? And it's not just liberal progressives who are thinking about this. Like, there are some real disagreements within the far left about what to do here. There's there's this dumb anti-imperialism. And like a friend of mine, an anarchist friend who may or may not have gone to fight with the YPG, said that when they were actually fighting ISIS, there were some airstrikes on ISIS fortifications, and everyone started chanting, "Obama, Obama." And these are anarchists and libertarian socialists who hate U.S. imperialism, but they also want to survive. And they recognize that a temporary tactical alliance is definitely what they need right now.
Yep. I mean, so these answers are not, you know, these questions are not simple. And I think it would have been much easier. It's a much easier question, I think, at the beginning of this involvement. But in terms of what our responsibility is, and I think broadly speaking, our interventions are bad because
worse.
They tend not to work. they exacerbate the problem.
They make everything worse.
All right. So we have an administration now that has no chief of staff, that has no attorney general, that has no secretary of defense. I think, you know, maybe there's a head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But I mean, I feel like those three right there are enough to prove, you know, to make the point that this is an absolute crap show. And meanwhile, they're voting on trying to keep the government open. Paul Ryan and the Tea Party essentially They passed yesterday a budget bill that included a $5 billion for the wall. It's not going to pass in the Senate. If it is, there may be a filibuster. And then it remains to be seen if Mitch McConnell will nuke the filibuster. I said earlier, I hope he does. Let's just do this. Who's steering the ship? Like, and I'm not convinced that it's not nobody. Like, you know, I feel like somewhere Bannon is sitting around
I was going to say Stephen Miller. It looks like Stephen Miller is still running the show there. I mean, he's back on the scene after, you know, you remember they took him off the network news because of how embarrassing it was his first go around. Now he has his resurgence. He's back, and he's back with a vengeance. I think the Stephen Millers of the administration, and that should be a terrifying notion when you consider their worldview.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, you know, and how is it that Stephen Miller has survived? I mean, there's reports out that Mick Mulvaney may be going now after all, because he said that Trump was a despicable human being during the campaign, and Trump just found out about it.
I mean, how did he survive? You have to understand, like, when you have a singular goal, there is you mentioned Steve Bannon. So, honestly, Steve Bannon has not actually left that administration because his protege, Stephen Miller, he is there. And so they have a singular goal that they're willing to sit through whatever they have to endure. Look at Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions actually almost made it, except for the fact that he was not lockstep with the president on the Russian investigation. But his focus on overturning voting rights and treading on voting rights rather and civil rights and their white nationalist goal is so genuinely important to them that they will suffer through anything they have to suffer through with Donald Trump and his ego and his madness. So, I mean, as hyperbolic as that sounds, at the end of the day, who's left? All of the people who want some of the, even though it's further right than we can tolerate, version of our normal institutions. Jim Mattis, for example, he was within the acceptable range of our Overton window and our institutions, albeit on the far right end, and we're glad to see him go. But anyone who's okay with that, you know, they're leaving. People who wanted some institutional norms, they're leaving. And who's left? The people who want to burn it all down in the name of white nationalism and white supremacy, they will sit through all of this to get their goals accomplished.
It does seem that Trump is just working on an incredibly sort of narrow, I don't know, agenda that is just what he thinks will win him an election. And it seems to be incredibly narrow. Like, he just seems to be just sort of really hung up on the wall, you know, like in a way that he thinks that somehow this is like some type of, you know, silver bullet or magic elixir. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I guess
I'm going to give you a headline here. I'm going to give Donald Trump some credit. That's the breaking news headline. Ben Dixon gives Donald Trump some credit. He actually understands taking care of your base. Albeit his base is full of white nationalists, Nazis, and white supremacists, he understands that all he has to do is continue to take care of the same base that got him in. So long as he has enough of those institutional Republicans who would rather vote for him than to vote for a Democrat, that does mean that he's going to win again, right? So he has his formula. It's the same formula that took him to the White House, and he's honestly using the White House to provide for his base. Unlike other presidents who run to the base during the primaries, and then they come back to the center during a campaign, and then they try to govern from the center within the, you know, our Overton window, which actually isn't centered, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yep.
Donald Trump is catering to his base.
You know, it's interesting because Greg Sargent had a tweet thread today where he was putting out an excerpt of his book, where he'd interviewed Ben Wickler, who I'm sure you know, formerly the chief communications guy for Move On, and actually an Air America, former Air America producer, and He was talking about the I think it was the last government shutdown, and the Republican, a lot of this has to do with the sort of the media in some respects, that the conservatives and the Republicans do not care about mainstream media. In fact, if they get criticized by the mainstream media, because their conservative media is so homogenous and so cohesive and narrow, right? Like everybody listens to, everybody watches Fox, and everything else that spins out of that is more or less, you know, sort of lockstep with Fox.
Right.
And if a Republican gets criticized in the mainstream media for a shutdown, they just take that to their media, and it's a badge of honor. Whereas the Democrats largely are worried about the mainstream media being critical of them. And part of that is because of the, you know, the consumption habits of the left, broadly speaking. And,
right.
and it's also the issue sets. The left has a much more siloed issue sort of movements than the right. And that was a big deal. I mean, that was a project that, you know, I remember Marcos Melitzis working on, you know, 10, 12, 13 years ago, trying to get just sort of like some cohesiveness on the left, the broad left, for political power. I mean, and so that dynamic is going to remain. We just saw it in play with AOC got shut out of that committee on the Green New Deal. Instead, they're keeping the climate change committee, and they're larding it up with people who have gotten funds from fossil fuels.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the perfect diagnosis. And I think people minimize how important – there's a direct line between conservative media and the Donald Trump presidency. There was a direct line between the conservative media and the George W. Bush presidency. And I think people don't understand how long this has been going on. They have an infrastructure that can literally take anybody and put them in the limelight enough to be a contender on the national stage. And when you have that ability, then you put people in the White House, and you can continue to put people in the White House. And here we are on the left. I mean, we're so fragmented and so segmented. And I get it. We are a big tent by design. Right. But we have to understand how powerful that singular message is on the right. And that single message really is white male grievance and trying to protect the power structure that Bill O'Reilly described as white Christian men. That's a very powerful single message that all of their media can rally behind.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just talk just briefly about the other sort of dynamic. I mean, I saw a report, I think it was that guy Josh Rogan, I don't know how much to take that, but that Trump made up his mind on Syria after speaking with Erdogan I guess it was just a week ago. And that, you know, and I think we speculated on this yesterday in terms of Syria, you know, the idea of Erdogan getting what he wants so that he stops, you know, drip-dripping stuff on MBS in his killing of Khashoggi. You know, there seems to be basically two like catalysts for Donald Trump's actions.
Right.
One is this notion that his base is a white nationalist, and that's politically. And then two, the other sort of thing that drives his policies seems to be some type of deep relationship with Saudi Arabia and Russia, right? Like now, maybe it's just a sentimental one. Maybe it's one where they, you know, have, I don't know, P tapes, or maybe it's one where it's just like he's making money from them. I mean, who knows, right? But those seem to be the two sort of like abiding. If we had X-ray vision, I feel like that's what we would see. Just, you know, two lines of catalysts.
And that's what makes me want to pause as a progressive, as excited as, I mean, all the wars that we're engaged in, we never should have been in, right? But I have pause. You have to take a minute and consider the context of the reason why he did this and then what flows from that decision, right? A lot of people are saying, oh, well, we can celebrate him doing the right thing for the wrong reason. And I'm like, well, do you understand what he's doing, the ramifications, how far reaching they are, and how it's going to further exacerbate war right in that region, how it's going to further exacerbate imperialism, like in the long run. Donald Trump's not making anti-imperialist decisions. Vladimir Putin is not an anti-imperialist. None of the players involved in Syria are anti-imperialist. And so if you really take a pause and think about it, and I honestly, I'm going to be sure, I have not figured this thing out yet, right? I'm not going to try to assert that other people haven't figured it out, and I have. I'm saying that we are so caught up in the usual anti-Trump versus the anti-Trumpism that we as a collective progressive body have not really even figured out the right position on this, because we're really just jockeying for who has the best tweet to slam the resistance and then who's got the best tweet to slam the anti-resistance. And so we're stuck in that limbo. Meanwhile, right, Donald Trump is being motivated by something that I honestly believe is going to exacerbate all of the problems that we're fighting against.
Right. I mean, I think this has also been a consistent theme with Donald Trump. The process and the intention and the catalyst for these moves are important because they're, you know, it's these things are bigger than just a headline.
Exactly.
There is a whole set of other cascading issues that come from this. And so how right, it's done, why it's done, have far greater implications down the road. It's not right, enough to just get the headline and wrap your arms around it. There needs to be some type of depth and substance to this stuff because this is complicated.
It's complicated. And we in progressive media, we have a daunting task of taking these complicated things, synthesizing them into talking points that we can say very quickly on the air. But we're fighting against conservative media that has no need of nuance or complexity, and they simply pound the drums for build the wall and raise $3 million in 3 days to do so. I mean, so we are in our own asymmetrical fight. I know that I always say that about the Democrats versus Republicans, but progressive media versus conservative media, man, we've got our work cut out for us.
All right, listen, I know you got to hit the road. Just lastly, let's just touch on this quickly. Michael Flynn shows up in front of a judge at the beginning of the week. Yeah. And this judge, as far as I know, is the first person who has read any sort of like been read into any major narrative with it. And there could be multiple ones, right? But certainly this is a major one involving Flynn. He's the first person to be read into it that we can hear his reaction, right? In real time. And he basically came back with like, oh my God, I can't believe you're not going to jail. I may send you to jail. I don't care what the prosecutor said. What you did was really, really, really bad. And
right.
I'm just giving you 90 days because you served in the military for 33 years and you were general. You need to do something to keep yourself out of jail. That sounds pretty serious,
right,
at least to a certain extent. And the prosecutors are willing to let this guy go away for what he gave them. Like,
right, right.
And so this week we find out that Whitaker initially had been reported that the DOJ's ethics review said he was okay not to recuse himself, but apparently that was just a blatant lie.
Right.
And right, that notion is out there and we don't find out about it. What happens next on that end? And are these sort of like what we're seeing, are they related?
You know what? I mean, if there's nothing happening, if this all comes out and it's no big deal with the Russia investigation, this would have been the greatest example of kabuki theater in all of world history, in all of human history. And the reason I pose it like that is because there's here's another cliche. There's so much smoke in this thing. There's got to be a fire here at some point. And I, you know, people are trying to dismiss the judge this week as being overzealous and being overly performative and all those things. But I mean, at this point, you, if you actually put the pieces of the puzzle together, you have to really be expecting something huge to come up next, to answer your question very directly. What they have on Donald Trump has to be something that is massively significant. And the only real question is, can you indict a sitting president? Because shorter than that, man, anything that comes up short of that milestone, I honestly think that it has been a massive waste, a massive showcase, something that the people who are doing the investigation need to be investigated at this point, because 2 years in, all of this grandstanding, all of these plea deals, the judge making it sound as though that this was the biggest thing that he's ever, you know, he wants to throw the guy in jail even though he took a plea deal. There better be some damn good evidence against Donald Trump, and the only question is a constitutional question. It's, can you indict a sitting president?
Yeah, I will say you may be too young to have like been fully conscious during the 7 years of Whitewater that brought about nothing except for the president lying in a deposition about whether he had sex.
I remember that, but come on, man, we expect better of our side, don't we? Like we expect better of the opposition, and I know Mueller would not present himself as taking sides in this, right? It's supposed to be a nonpartisan, but there is a political. This is clearly political, right? There's a political aspect to this. There is a push from the left, from the Democrat center, to see what's happening with Donald Trump. And at this point, if the people at the top of this political machine understand right now or have understood at any point that there's nothing really here, I think those people need to be held accountable from us more so than the Republicans.
I agree that the left is heavily invested in this investigation, but let's be clear. None of the players who initiated this
He brought this on himself.
And it's not like there hasn't been, the congressional and senatorial intelligence committees. They were run by Republicans.
That's true. I will also add this. They brought this on themselves. Yeah.
Right now, Mueller's running a $20 million surplus on this investigation. Mm-hmm. Not bad. Maybe this would be a great way to fund free colleges. Just keep investigating anyone around Donald Trump and taking their illicit gains.
That's the key. Here's the key thing, though, right? If there absolutely has to be something on Trump at this point, because Michael Flynn was a good enough catch for them to send him to jail for a very long time. And if they did not send Michael Flynn to jail, that would have been enough to be politically satisfying as well as some sense of justice. We didn't get that with Michael Flynn, so they sure as hell better get that with Donald Trump.
Yes, I agree. Like, if you wanted to make a graceful exit out of an investigation, you could say, like, we just arrested the chief security advisor of the president of the United States because he had a plan to kidnap a Turkish national in Pennsylvania and ship him, the back of a plane. I mean, that's like, we just found out that he thinks he's in like a Steven Seagal movie or something. But Ben Dixon, thank you so much, man. Thank you so much for appearing on this show this year. I really appreciate it. I want you to have best of holiday and great new year. Folks should check out the North Star. Give us the URL again.
BuildingTheNorthStar.com.
Building
We're
the North Star.
15,000 members, Sam. It's out of control.
Whoa. That's amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah. 1 month. It's crazy. It's awesome.
Man. You just put that that wall GoFundMe to shame.
Oh. we didn't raise that much money, but in terms of supporters, we pretty much are. We're doing something I don't think I've ever seen before. If it was a public GoFundMe campaign, I know we would have broken all their records. So that just speaks to the need of what we're trying to do. So buildingthenorthstar.com.
I'm very happy for you, and I'm excited to see what you guys start producing. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It. Have a great, and we'll talk to you in 2019.
Hey, take care, man.
All right, bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, we're a little bit early for Judy. Well, let's Ben was kind enough. On the road, pulled over at a rest stop, I think.
That's commitment.
We'll get into the the Christian Nielsen stuff. She is a hideous human being.
Should do Trump coyotes, maybe?
Yes. Michael, you want to be here for this? Oh, you know what? Let's save that for Judy. Or, I don't know, the hair. Because
she might like Huckabee and Kilmeade.
That's true. Let's do the coyote. Although, or let's do Stephen Miller, because Stephen Miller really blew his top in this segment. I mean, this guy comes on to CNN and his hair is on fire. Yeah, did you notice that?
He blew his hair right off his top.
There you go. Thank you. Wow. Steve Miller looks different in this picture. I'm trying to imagine why that was. Do we have the other one just to compare it? I mean, this is... Wow. He really... That guy really... All right, it's all right. Put it back up there. Here he is on with Wolf Blitzer. And, you know, this is part of the failure of the mainstream press. I'm going way back here, so maybe only some of the older people in the audience will remember this. But 7 weeks ago, we were under massive threat from a huge swarm of people in what was known as a caravan that had second homeowners in Minnesota worried that their homes would be overrun by this caravan. And the reason why, you may not remember, it's because the media has not talked about the caravan since the election. And the reason why the caravan got so huge was because the media would only talk about the caravan. And how would they report? I'm not saying you don't report on what the president is saying. But this is how you cover the president talking about the threat of the caravan. In the same way you cover the president talking about the threat from the, abominable snowman. You report that the president says we have to be worried about the abominable snowman.
That's right. Obama did nothing about
it.
But
scarf.
As you know, there really is no such thing. Or we've been through this before.
Snowman
or
was
like
part of ISIS.
Right. And but in pursuing and going down and making the caravan a real thing. Now, it is a real thing, but to make it a real, to portray it in any way as if it was a real threat, continues this false narrative that we have some type of crisis at the border. There may be a political crisis for Donald Trump amongst his own base, but this country does not have a crisis of immigration whatsoever. End of story, period. And this needs to be articulated in situations where you have the follically challenged Stephen Miller appearing with anybody, in this case, Wolf Blitzer on CNN.
In the same position as we were a week ago, the president had, as you know, 2 years, a Republican-controlled House and a Republican-controlled Senate to get this done, to build that border wall. Why did he fail?
Well, the House is voting as we speak on border security. The fight's only just beginning. As you know, first of all, when we're talking about success on border security, this president has made unprecedented achievements in that area. But right now, as we speak, we are rallying Republican lawmakers to try and get a bill out of the House. And the fundamental issue here is whether or not Democrats will supply votes to pass border security, or whether they're going to push for open borders, which equals massive crime and massive crime.
But, Stephen, if the president...
300 Americans die every week from heroin crossing through our southern border.
I understand completely what you're saying about the importance of border security.
Pause it. I imagine Wolf Blitzer has done some preparation for this, but to the extent that 300 Americans a week die from a heroin overdose, I'm not sure about that statistic. But even if I stipulate it, the vast majority of heroin that comes across the border comes in through legal means. Smuggled in through legal means, through legal points of entry.
May I feed Wolf Blitzer a question? Is the caravan threat more or less real than what was on your head on Sunday?
Yeah, exactly. That would have been good. Continue.
Americans die every week from heroin crossing through our southern border.
I understand completely what you're saying about the importance of border security, and I understand what you're saying about the border wall. The president spoke about it in virtually every campaign speech, as we know. Here's the question. Why didn't he get the border wall done during his first 2 years in office with a Republican majority in the House and a Republican majority in the Senate?
Well, we actually have completed or have underway 100 miles. But the president's made clear that he's not interested in continuing to build the wall one stretch at a time. He wants to build the wall by getting the money now, just like the president was very clear about for the last year leading up to this funding fight.
But he hasn't received the
right now as we speak. There is a surge of illegal immigration heading towards our country that presents a national crisis now. Not a year from now, right now. And this president took an oath, like every lawmaker in Congress, to defend the citizens of this country. How many more innocent people have to die in pursuit of an open borders agenda?
Calm down a minute. We don't have to yell. These are important policy issues that we're discussing. The American people have a right to know where you and the president, the White House, stands.
Wow, he really did blow his top there.
I like how Wolf has
not getting enough out of that joke.
I like how Wolf, like,
hair's on fire.
He's literally had members of his family write pieces like, I don't know where we went wrong here or what happened or what the hell is wrong with this kid. He's obviously incredibly disturbed and sick and weird and disgusting. But, like, Wolf has none of the moral indignation, but he just has to, like, all right, look, I totally understand preening for your boss and being a completely craven media performer. However, I have my own craven role to do, son.
That's right.
And I'm going to need you to calm down a little bit.
Are you aware of what the score is? That's basically it. Like, how come your boss has not tallied enough bodies in this situation?
Exactly. Your boss should be more than happy. You were able to hold on to some red state seats, and his base is absolutely racially riled up, and you got a nice clean 15 seconds in there for the highlight reel.
But
and now I'm going to want to take
here's
the segment
problem,
back.
Here's the problem, is that Wolf is asking him questions only about the process. Why has your president failed? Now, this is like a bank shot. I mean, you know, Wolf is going to say, like, well, when he says why the president has failed, he's going to have to admit that the policy is not good for Republicans. But why not just go directly at the premise of the policy that the guy is advocating for? There is no crisis.
I don't think that has been Wolf Blitzer's brief.
I know.
This
is the first Blitzer clip I've watched in probably 5 or 10 years.
I don't have a memory of being on this earth and Wolf Blitzer not being on CNN reinforcing whatever the dominant narrative was of anything.
Well,
and his only non-CNN experience that I know of was that he literally worked at AIPAC and Jerusalem Post, I think. Yeah.
I mean, these news guys are still motivated and incentivized to be polite and not challenge their interviewees too much because that's how they do things in the media, and they want access even when the one side is utterly insane.
I guess getting access to Stephen Miller is has some value, but
have some self-respect.
No,
just say Candyman in front of a mirror 3 times or something.
Matt just hit, you know, I think that you just answered your own question. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, Judy Gold.
Yeah.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, on the phone, it is a pleasure to welcome back a frequent guest in not just 2018, but 2017, maybe 2016. I don't know. Time is so flattened, but 2016 too. And I think many of us have maintained our sanity because Judy, in some ways, sort of absorbs it all in some way, and it comes out sounding like this.
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
What the fuck is the matter with him?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Well, Judy Gold.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding. That's the president of the United States. That's the president. What the fuck? Like, this guy, he's...
Okay. All right, let's get...
Like, fucking...
Judy?
Wow, you really got the greatest hit.
That song really played. Yeah. We didn't even make that song. That came from an adoring fan of yours, Judy.
I love that. Thank you, adoring fan. You're the only show I do where they actually have a song for me, and it's so melodic.
Yeah, it's a great song.
Yeah.
And we should also say, of course, that people should check out Just Kill Me Now.
No, it's not Just Kill Me Now. It's Kill Me Now.
Kill Me
There's
Now.
There's no just in there. Kill Me Now. It's my new album, and it's my podcast. Okay.
Both.
So annoying.
Oh my God. You probably don't know who this is, but you really remind me of the liberal version of Matt Chrisman, a very angry man on the left.
Oh, no. Is he really hot and
yes.
gets all the girls? Because that would be me.
Bay. Total bay.
Got him.
Yeah.
So, Judy, how's your week going?
You know, here's the thing. Like, seriously, what the fuck is going on? Okay. He is out of his fucking mind. He's a fucking toddler. He's an idiot. He's dumb. He's just a psycho, narcissistic. He's dumb. He doesn't read. He doesn't know what the fuck is going on. How is he still there? How is he still there? How?
Well,
how is he still there? How is this? Everyone in his administration is in jail, or it's like, oh my God, how much more do you need? How much fucking more do you need? Clinton had a blowjob with someone who was 21 or 22. Okay, that's what he did. This motherfucker is ruining the world. He's ruining the whole fucking world because he's a fucking baby. Oh my God. Anyone else would be fired from their job like a year and a half ago. I can't take it anymore. I can't. Okay. And then I put on MSNBC in the morning. I think he's going to be gone at 6 o'clock and he's still fucking there. Okay.
And are you watching now? Sorry. Are you literally watching?
It is. Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's just like, I can't. I mean, this Mattis thing, first of all, Mattis went into his office, you know, because he can't fire anyone.
Right.
Unless it's on some stupid fucking television show. And he walks in. I don't even know how Trump read the letter because he can't fucking read. And then he tries to spin it. And it's like, no more, honey. We're done. Your fucking hair. Fuck you. Sorry.
Do you think Mattis had a big problem with his hair?
First of all, the fact that he was elected president with that hair, there's an issue right now. The hair itself is a fucking issue. He's orange and he has that fucking hair. I can't believe what's happening in this country. I cannot believe. And he has the nuclear code.
Yes. Well, let's play this clip. I will see what get your reaction to this. This is one where he is again trying to establish all the potential threats to the nation that not having a wall constitutes.
Right.
And he's got Mike Pence looking really, Mike Pence looking really just, he's so admiring of his president. And,
oh my God, he's fucking in love with him. Go ahead.
And here's Donald Trump, who apparently does not thinks that we are being invaded by a pack of wild canines. Here is Donald Trump.
But before going any further, I want to address a matter of vital national importance. You've all been seeing it, reading it, hearing it, border security. Every nation has not only the right, but the absolute duty to protect its borders and its citizens. A nation without borders is a nation not at all. Without borders, we have the reign of chaos, crime, cartels, and believe it or not, coyotes.
All right, go back.
Without borders, what do you think a fucking nation is? It's fucking borders, okay? This is my land, that's your land, you fucking asshole.
All right, listen to what he says after that, though.
We have the reign of chaos, crime, cartels, and believe it or not, coyotes. I will not surrender this nation to the whims of criminal organizations.
So he literally doesn't know what the term coyote means.
Does he
in that
think
context.
It's literal?
He thinks it's an actual
animals?
Type. It's a
I
type of coyote
it's
from Mexico.
I think he thinks it's the, wait, wow. What about how he posted that fucking thing he did? You know, Green Acres is the yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
He
did you know that?
That video of him and Megan Mullally, right? Singing the Green Acres theme song.
I just skip out on some of
this. Like, that's the fucking president of the United States. Like, do you understand that?
But, Judy, he thinks that if we don't have a slatted fence, that coyotes are going to keep running through across the border, and we're going to have all these extra coyotes that will probably attack our livestock.
They're bred very differently over there.
There's more. Hold on.
He's dumb.
Without borders, we have the reign of chaos, crime, cartels, and believe it or not, coyotes. I will not surrender this nation to the whims of criminal organizations who prey on the vulnerable, who hurt women and children, and who spread human misery and suffering. Human trafficking and massive drug inflow must also be stopped. It's at a tremendous level. What we're doing and the incredible job being done by Border Security, ICE, Border Patrol, local police, and the military. The military has been incredible. And we're stopping them. It's a process you wouldn't believe tough. But we're stopping them in record numbers. At this moment, there is a debate over funding border security and the wall. Also called, so that I give them a little bit of an out, steel slats. We don't use the word wall necessarily, but it has to be something special to do the job, steel slats. I've made my position very clear. Any measure that funds the government must include border security.
Now, first off,
he looks incredibly bad.
You can't even, it's like dumber than the fucking, it's not, you can't make it up. Like, it's so fucking stupid. Like, it's fucking stupid. Like, you're a fucking idiot. Okay, sorry.
My favorite part is that he's at once saying we're stopping them in record numbers. We're doing it. We're doing it like it's never done before. We're really doing a great job.
Right.
So why do you need a wall? Like you just said, we're stopping them in record numbers. Why do you need a wall then? And then, I'm going to let them off the hook. Steel slats. They don't have to even say the word wall. You could just say steel slats. What?
Steel slats. So he can take all of our military in Syria and Afghanistan, and they can sit there and kill the coyotes. Like they can stand on the border and kill the coyotes.
Innovative thinking from the lesbian comic.
That are coming
That's
in.
That's what we need.
The fucking coyotes that are coming. He is. Is he going to be out? Is he going to be out? Because if he doesn't get out from this shit, then there's something fucking wrong in this country.
Well, yeah, there's definitely something fucking wrong in this country. I mean, come on.
All right, calm down. All right, I know there's something wrong, but this is like the this is it. And the fact that journalists have to sit there and go, well, he mentioned the coyotes and the steel slats and the, you know, and they have to act like they're like the president, like he fucking knows what he's talking about. Yeah, it's like he's not even a real person.
I agree with you, Judy. It's pretty fucked up. It hit me all over again the other day when I had to go to the passport office to get a new passport, which was very efficient, by the way. You know, that's an argument for government, really. But there was a picture. There's a picture of the president in the lobby, and I just looked up, and there he was.
You would fly back in if you ever want to be a for real, like drop all of the radicalism and just be a nice liberal. When you would fly back in the country and Obama was there and you'd get back onto land and you'd just be like, oh, all right. And now you fly back into the country and this bloated orange fuck is looking at you.
People vandalize that thing yet or what?
It's right by the security
guard. It would be
a
little difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought about it a little bit more.
You have to fucking look at that. And like, you have to look at that.
Most of the people who work there are people of color. And probably did not vote for him. And they have to see that fucking face every single day when they go into work.
Right. I haven't seen that. I have not experienced that. I mean, now that you like, I occasionally you see that in offices, but I don't think I could handle it.
Dude, it hit me all over again. It was brutal. Living in an episode of Black Mirror.
It's brutal, man. It is just so foundationally disrespectful.
This whole thing right now, when, you know, the infrastructure in this country is like basically falling, like London Bridge is fucking falling down, and he wants his border wall. I am not gonna do anything. I get my border wall. He's just a fucking idiot.
You know, at least your kids are old enough now that you don't have to sort of like shield them. Like, I can't talk about the presidency with. You know, we talk about it, but he says like Donald Trump is a bad man. And I'm like, you're right. And
he's a horrible person. It's not even about conservatism or liberalism. And he is awful. He's a horrible, abhorrent, disgusting excuse for a human being.
Now, I don't want to be too nitpicky here, but. The reason why Donald Trump has been able to maintain himself in this position is because everything he's doing, aside from being, you know, sort of personally grotesque and, personally stupid and ignorant, is perfectly aligned with the conservative movement and very helpful for the Republican Party, which is why the Republican Party has been so helpful for him. I mean, this is what conservatism leads to. You know, when Donald Trump was running for office, we were like, it makes total sense for Republicans to vote for him because they've been building, you know, a suit that he just basically fits. Not vice versa. This existed before Donald Trump. It's just that Donald Trump is the perfect manifestation of it.
Right. This is like, if you could take all those people and all of their characteristics and put them into one thing, that would be this fucking orange piece of shit. You know?
Yes.
Dumb, watches TV all the time, a baby, doesn't give a shit about anyone else but himself, just wants money, 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 has never done a fucking thing for anyone else. Like Obama, they're showing video. He's at a children's hospital. This guy's never fucking walked into a children's hospital. And you know what? If he needs to go to the hospital, he should go to the fucking children's hospital because he's a fucking toddler.
Children's hospitals are dirty. Well, there's a lot of stairways there, too.
I can't believe what's going on. Like, I cannot believe the shutdown. What does he have? Producers in the thing going in his Oval Office? Like, okay, so if we do this, then we'll get a lot of views. We'll do the shutdown. And then, you know, it's like, it's ridiculous. This is people's lives. That 7-year-old girl dead. And this fuckface is still alive.
Well, we can only hope that 2019 will bring, some good cheer, Judy. I
yeah.
I hate to rush you off, but
I know it's your end of the year, and I just want to say thank you to everyone for letting me vent, and I love all of you, and Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and I really love Stephen Miller. I'm really attracted to him.
We love you, Judy. Thank you so much.
Love you.
You've made it really special this year.
Thank you.
Had a draw.
Tolerable in some fashion. Judy, yeah. Have a great have a great New Year's. Please take some
you
time
too.
For yourself.
You
self-care.
Too.
Self-care, Judy.
I will.
All right.
I'm
I'll talk
do
to you
it.
Soon.
All right. Bye. Love you guys.
Love you. Thank you.
We had a drawdown from Syria where we were super pumped. They did an incredible job against ISIS. And the ones who died, they're the ones who are happiest.
Is that what he said?
He literally was like, and the ones that are up in heaven, they're the most happy. They would be the most happy.
They're cheering us on.
They're cheering us on. And they just did a tremendous job. He did. I just love how, like, the
do we
draw
have that clip?
Down video. We played it yesterday.
Oh, you played it yesterday. Jesus.
They love
like,
it.
His drawdown video from like this major military conflict, he clearly could not. He's just like, just put it on Instagram. It doesn't matter. I know I looked off camera. It's fine.
I saw this. We should tell you, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg recovering after having two cancerous nodules being removed from her lung. There is no evidence of further disease. The 85-year-old is resting comfortably.
I'm keeping you on your toes. Let's see if I make it to 2020. Yeah, let's do a GoFundMe to harvesting organs for Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Jesus. All right.
Get her some Peter Thiel blood.
We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, the final appearance of Matthew Film Guy and Isabel Gillies on The Majority Report in 2018. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar on The Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, there's no way I should put it this way. We're going to endeavor to mix two voices at one time. But there is, unfortunately, no way to mix these two songs, which actually is probably good. Let's play. Well, we could, but we won't do it. Here we go.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
And not just IsabelGillies.com, but also this, too. I gotta say, both those songs are great songs. And when we moved over into the new studio, I could actually hear the words to the Matthew Film Guy thing, and it was even better. Matthew Film Guy, Isabel Gillies, welcome to the show, the final one, the final live one of 2018. Guys?
That song always gets me really jacked up. I just love it. I'm ready to go.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I feel the same way, Matthew, about both of ours, actually.
So exciting. So exciting.
Mine's sort of moving. Like, I get moved a little bit.
I think yours
you
is very sweet.
And then you rock
off. A little wells up a little bit.
I think that was some of Jimmy Reefer Cake's best work, actually, is that that seems like. So, Isabel, it has been too long. How are you? What's going on? When's your book coming out?
It's been so long, I was starting to get freaked out.
Well, this has been a pretty
freaky.
What
did I not? The world's falling apart, so you have a lot to talk about.
It's true.
I guess you can't really. I mean, you know, come on. It's sort of hard to get your mind around even today. But everything is good, and the book comes out February 12th, 2019. And I'll just do a little plug that. Mariska Hargitay is going to interview me at the Y on February 12th.
Well, say hello. I don't know if she remembers me from the Margaret Cho show that we worked on together.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yes.
That would be so fun.
She played a bartender, and I played a love-stricken friend.
Were you in love with her?
Yeah, my character was, yeah.
Easy to be in love with her. That is so fun. I will definitely tell her. I might even call her right after this and tell her. But anyway, she's going to talk with me about Cozy and the book, and that'll be fun. And what else? I taught middle school this semester.
You did?
Yeah, I taught 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders a memoir class.
Wow. I mean, do the 5th and 6th and 7th graders, they have, of course, they have stuff to write about, but I mean, memoirs sound a little bit,
you would be amazed at what they wrote. It was quite moving, and it was like one of the best things I ever did.
Wow. Maybe I should.
I'm so amazed by teachers and what their experience every day is. I mean, we send our kids to school, we kind of don't know what's going on, and it's like, this whole world, and you get so attached to these students. At first I thought, I'm never going to remember their names. And then at like 3 weeks later, I was thinking about them in the middle of the night. I was like, I wonder if Tyler is really getting down that, you know, to that, the deep stuff that I mean, you become completely attached. And, you know, when I left, I walked down the hallway and cried.
Wow.
Because I was so proud of them. Amazing.
Well, that's exciting. Are you going to do that more?
Not this next semester, but maybe the next semester.
And
you know, I volunteer. It's not like I...
Right. It's not a gig yet. Yeah. I mean, Matthew, Film Guy, also a teacher of sorts. Isn't that right, Matthew?
That's absolutely right. I leave almost every time I teach my senior citizens film appreciation class in Queens in tears. Usually it's because I've shown them a very depressing movie. But often it's because I've, you know, touched a soul. In fact, this past week, this was the last one for the year, and I actually had like them coming up to me and saying, thank you for showing me films I've never seen before, and I even got a Starbucks gift card. So really, right now, it feels all worth it.
Wow. And
that's so good.
How much
thank
was
you,
the
Isabel.
Card for?
It was actually $25.
Wow. So
so it's all finally paying off.
In my comedic scenario, they weren't keeping up with inflation. It was like, that's $2.50.
Right.
Enjoy yourself.
I mean, I got more, actually. I got an American Express gift card. I was really.
So this is the hustle.
I felt the nachas amongst the Jews. Michael, I can't hear you back there. Are you talking?
Oh.
I can't hear him either.
Sorry. I was going to say, this job is sort of like the same way Huffington Post would have people blog for them. Like, they pay you either absolutely nothing or a little bit, but you gain it in exposure. Or in your case, gift cards.
That's right.
I see.
That's right. It's all for the exposure.
It's the exposure economy.
Hey, Huffington Post does not give you gift cards.
Yeah, Huffington Post. No. Unlike Huffington Post, there's actually an upside to this experience.
So this is better than Huffington Post.
Isabel, did you get?
I'm glad I made the right decision.
Isabel, did you get gift cards from your students?
No, but I brought them Dunkin' Donuts on the last class, which was like I walked in with, I can't think of what the best thing in the whole world is, but it was the Dunkin' Donuts. They were like, oh, yes! Like, it was like they'd never, I don't know.
I feel like for 5th and 6th and 7th graders, that makes total sense to me. The idea of them getting Dunkin' Donuts is huge.
And the cool thing is, too, is you don't just walk in with a bag. You walk in with these long, flat boxes, and it just looks like a king's bounty. It's just like this pink, beautiful box. And then I got them in three. I got them in strawberry confetti, chocolate confetti, and vanilla confetti. And guess what everyone went for? To my utter surprise.
Strawberry.
Yep.
Yep.
I was like, you guys, they're gross. Like clearly the best flavor.
Totally gross. And
I didn't get any gift cards, but I got sincere thank yous. And that coming from a seventh grader is like, you know, they don't.
That's almost as good as a gift card.
Thank
yeah.
you, Mrs. Gillies.
Well, yeah, thank you, Mrs. Gillies.
If Gillies I had to choose
an important class to me.
Like the worst age of the age at which you are the worst human being, I would say seventh grade.
Thank you, Mrs. Gillies. I'm sorry I threatened to kill you the first week of the class. I ended up learning a lot.
The fifth graders, because they're all in the same class. It's like Montessori. I've got a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old in the same class. And we're reading Educated and we're reading like Anthony Bourdain and we're reading Julia Child and we're reading, you know, Anne Frank and we're reading all these amazing books. And they, it's just, the 10-year-old.
Give them Malcolm X the next time.
What?
I read Malcolm X when I was 13. That's a great formative memoir, for real.
No, I'm sure it is. You know, we read I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. We read Mindy Kaling's book. We read a lot of them. It was fun.
And wait, so anyway, the 10-year-olds.
I had one 10-year-old girl who would like, they're kind of clueless. And so we'd be talking about something really meaningful and the whole class would be silent. And then suddenly she'd just get on up with her purple sparkly pencil case and just go to the pencil sharpener and like, I love everything.
I hope you told her like, hey, you got to raise your hand and you're in the middle. Wow, you really got to attached to Amanda. What
doesn't even need a bow on it.
Matt, do you have a similar Matthew? Do you have a similar experience? Did any of your seniors who are in your class get up in the middle and disrupt class?
Yeah, you know, I recently showed them a movie that I recommend everybody, Michael Haneke's Amour. And if you know anything about it, it's about a couple sort of struggling with the wife's sort of slow deterioration due to old age. So yeah, a few got up and left saying they couldn't actually handle the rest of the movie. I think that's similar.
Nice movie to show them, Matthew. That's very nice of you. That's nice. Good selection. Mrs.
Wow.
Goldfarb should
showing
be
a lot of empathy there, Matthew.
What about you?
He doesn't candy coat
or
things
for that age.
I like that.
But Sam, that directly preceded me being handed two gift cards. So I got to disagree with you that was.
Well, they showed up with the gift cards. They didn't walk out and buy the gift cards.
Matthew's like, thanks for the Starbucks, suckers.
Yeah, but
now watch your rapidly depreciating
health. They could have held them and sat on them if they really felt
that
way, right?
How do you know they didn't? Maybe there was five in that room
exactly.
and they only gave you two.
No, I set up the movie very sort of in an aesthetic kind of environment because I don't know, again, if anyone's familiar with this movie, the main actors, Emmanuel Riva, who was amazing in this movie, and Jean-Louis Trintignant, they were both stars of earlier 60s art movies. So the preceding weeks I showed Hiroshima Mon Amour, which Emmanuel Riva was in a younger woman, and A Man and a Woman, which Jean-Louis Trintignant was in. And so they kind of appreciated that I was sort of letting them live through these actors' lives in sequence. And,
I think we cut back to the senior center where they're all standing together like, I don't think I'll give him my gift card. That was very rude.
You do bring up a good point. I may have to ask anybody if they're holding onto the gift cards that they would have otherwise given me. But no, a lot of people actually said to me, you know, I didn't have the courage to go see this movie myself. And I'm really glad that you brought it here unannounced to me so I would be forced, basically, to see it. And I think it was a rewarding experience for everybody. It was for me.
Next week, so this is at the Queens JCC. Maybe next class you bring in Richard Spencer and let him talk for a little bit. And see.
I was so scared to see what he would say. But because you brought him here against my will, it was very informative. Would you like a gift card?
At first I thought if Richard Spencer came in
and started talking about how horrible the Jews are, I'd feel a little awkward. Yeah. But it was nice to do it with everyone else here.
Here's $30 for Starbucks. Next week, Matthew goes and shows Isabel's kids Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you guys should switch classes.
You anticipate. But yes, I think, Isabel, I think it's a great idea. Show them kids in Clockwork Orange next week.
Yeah, kids. As a 22-year-old, whenever that came, I went to a midnight showing with somebody that I had a crush on. I was so undone and by that movie. It was like I felt like I had to take a shower. It was like the most dark. Oh,
exactly. Oh, it's one of the greatest movies that I have no desire to ever see again.
And I don't want my children to see it.
Well, didn't the guy who was what was the name of the director of that film?
Harmony.
Well, that was Larry Clark was
Larry
the director.
Clark.
Harmony
Larry
Crane wrote the script.
Oh, right, Harmony.
Oh,
Crane.
Oh, right. Okay.
Now, who was it Harmony Crane who would go out and get into fights and videotape it as he was getting beat up?
That's a long rumored film that he was making called Fight Harm, where he would actually accost bouncers and other people on the street and try to get them to beat him up. Apparently, he was going through a very serious drug problem at the time. So I don't think we'll ever see that movie. But yes, that's one of those stories.
When do we get to see
Home?
Because I had heard from my brother-in-law that he would go and try to get bouncers in the Bowery to beat him up. Do we get to watch that, Matthew?
I mean, I have cultivated the talents in terms of the taste of this audience, this group of hardcore 12 to 15 senior citizens that come to me every week. I think I could show them basically anything at this point, and they would still be giving me gift cards by the end of it. Wow. I really have a hardcore, great, brave, intelligent senior citizens from Middle Queens.
There you go.
Love that.
You know what? You should maybe have Isabel come visit the class.
We could show them Metropolitan. They'd probably like it.
I think they would like it. I like to throw in something a little nicer like that once in a while, you know. Don't try
and
to
berate
there.
And then it would be the star, you know. I could come. That's always fun to meet the actor.
Yeah, I mean, there may not be any gift cards in it, but you know, if you're willing to do that, that would be really cool.
I'm used to not getting gift cards, so I'm all right.
Yeah, she got no gift cards from her students.
I got.
She
has to.
All right, well, listen.
Maybe Isabel will show up with donuts.
Gift cards right
maybe
away.
Some right, of the
listen,
kids didn't like the Mindy Kaling.
Metropolitan.
Maybe they didn't like the Mindy Kaling.
Looking
book.
Good, girl.
All right, so let us.
What
cut
did you
to
say about Metropolitan?
Oh, just a joke. Fritz Lang's Metropolitan. It's like a really old movie.
Oh no, Jamie, you're thinking of Metropolis.
Oh my God, I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot. Never mind. Continue.
That's why you have a film guy around to make you feel that way.
All right. So, film guy, film lady, what should we do? You guys have a year-end recommendations? I know I didn't even.
Yes.
You did. All right. You're the best. All right. Ladies first. Isabel, what would you like? What do you recommend?
I have two because one is a binge series. If you're around in the holidays and you need to sort of binge something for many, many days, I have one. And then I have a movie, which is a movie that happens to be on the theater and on Netflix.
Ooh.
So I figure...
That's awesome.
But that's kind of fun. And it's... even though I saw it recently, I do believe it is... Well, it's my favorite movie for sure that's on Netflix right now. But it might be my favorite movie of the year.
Wow.
And that is... Dun-dun-dun, Roma.
Roma.
Don't, Roma. Do you know what it is?
Didn't even hear of it. What is it?
I do.
Wait, what is it? Sounds familiar.
But then again.
What is it?
It's a beautiful movie that is directed by Alfonso Cuarón. Cuarón? I don't know if I'm saying that right. C-U-A-R-O-N. Cuarón?
Is it action? Is it an action film?
No, it's not action. Oh, not action. But it is one of the most... It's a movie about a family is what I'll say, because I really don't want to give away too much.
Okay.
It's in black and white. It's in Mexico. It takes place in Mexico. It's one of the largest movies I've ever seen about something that is so small and regular. It's just these... Do you agree, Matthew?
You know, I've yet to see it, but everything I've read about it makes it sound like something I would really enjoy. It's sort of a throwback to an Italian neorealist look, and it's like a very just domestic drama, but in a, you know, like what you're indicating, a kind of grander cinematic scale. I mean, it's
yeah,
follow-up
kind of like
Gravity, you know, he made the...
Wow, all right.
So movie, it's not like, you know, Fellini and all this, it's like sometimes that leaves me cold because I just feel detached from it. And this has so much warmth and so much intimacy. And you just feel, I couldn't believe my eyes. I just couldn't. And so it's on Netflix, but it's also in the movie theater. So
did you see it in the theater, Isabel, or on Netflix?
I saw it in the theater. But I noticed the other day when I turned on Netflix that it was on. So I think that's what they're doing. And I think this film company, you know, did it that way on purpose. So that's my film recommendation. And then my series recommendation is Ozark.
I've seen that.
Do you like it?
You know, I got to say, all right, it's okay. I'll tell you why I have a little bit of a problem with it. I feel like the bones stick out of it a little bit too much. I see the structure. Like, I just, like, I know, like, they sat down and they need to, we need this character and we need that character. And this is going to be a family show, sort of like a la Sopranos and every other family show. And we need to have this guy and that guy. And then the kids are going to be this precocious one and that precocious one. And then... I feel like, I have to say, I watched the rest of it. I've watched all of it, and I think it's perfectly entertaining. But when, Jason?
Bateman.
Bateman, when he directs, he fell in love with the drone shot a little too much, and I got a little annoyed by that.
See, I'm just in it to win it with that show, which is true of me with lots and lots of things. Like, A Star Is Born. Good to go. I just sat there and was happy the whole time. Like, I'm an easy win with a lot of things. But with that one, I was like, I love Laura Linney.
Yep, she's good.
I thought Jason Bateman was really good.
He's really good in it.
She is really good in it.
They're both good in it. All the actors.
Yeah, they are.
No, the acting is really good.
On that show,
the acting is really good. No doubt.
I just think that if you're sitting around and you're like, wow, it's okay, you know, holidays sometimes can be a little depressing. That's kind of a quick, fun, you know, you kind of like get the popcorn and let it rip.
I've started to watch Homecoming, and that's a little bit darker.
Oh.
That's a little bit dark. It's the same guy. It was based on a podcast on Gimlet, apparently, and it's the same guy who did Sam Esmail, who did Mr. Robot, which I love.
Is that on Netflix?
I think it's on Amazon Prime.
Julia Roberts, isn't it?
Yep.
I also saw. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. What else?
I saw. Speaking of Julia Roberts, it is not one of my recommendations, although I did love it. Which is Ben Is Back.
Yeah.
I just love Julia Roberts.
Yeah, you just love Julia Roberts.
The Netflix, I mean, excuse me, Narcos Mexico is actually very good.
Yes, I
That's
was just
like
going to recommend
real,
that too.
Like, I like all of them, and I have a, I'm like Isabel with mafia and gangster stuff. I guess I'm like it. Although it's funny now, I've started to get sick of it at this point. Like, my bar has started to rise a little bit because there's so many things like that, which is maybe why I don't like Ozark so much. But I think all seasons of Narcos are good. But Narcos Mexico actually, like, it has a different color palette. It's real. I mean, I don't know. I haven't rewatched it to pick it over, but I think it's very
really?
Well done.
You like it better than the season with Pablo Escobar?
The Pablo Escobar. I like the Cali Cartel season best. That's more interesting
what?
To me. Yeah.
All right. Now, wait a second. Let's before this devolves, let's go to Matthew,
it's
film
evolving.
Guy. Isabel has said Roma and Ozarks. I would agree that Ozarks is a very easy watch and not going to be too dark. Going to be sort of a fun
right.
family
That's a pretty dark
thing.
Show.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know about that.
But all right, so and Roma, I think I'm definitely going to watch.
And Roma, you're going to love Roma.
All right, so Matthew, film guy, what say you? What dark, difficult, very hard to digest film will you recommend?
Well, as I mentioned previously, it went over really well with my film class, and you could do a lot worse. Ending your year on a note of mortality, finality, romantic illusions being dispelled, and just overall searing your soul with the kind of unblinking look at the end of our lives in Michael Haneke's Amour. It's about a couple who are in their 80s, they're retired music teachers in France, and one day Anne has a stroke, the wife, and it basically challenges them to handle this kind of a change in their relationship. It forces the husband to kind of wrestle with whether or not he is, wanting to keep her in his home and take care of her beyond her wishes. So it has some of those end of life, you might say, death panel implications. And it's just overall a great movie to confront your own mortality. And what else is the end of the year for but staring directly into the face of death?
That is that is great.
I do think it's a very powerful practice to reflect every morning in your meditation that you're going to be dying fairly soon. And it does motivate
it's freeing.
You.
It's actually freeing. You care less about the minutia.
It's fine.
You remember the important things. And watching a film with this kind of sort of heavy look is, I think, just what the doctor ordered for these days.
Great. Well, I got news
for you. Or watch Ozarks, either way.
Right.
No, but Roma is also not death as death is in there, but Roma also is not a light like bounce out of 2018. This is a reflective, beautiful movie about, it's not just about family, but it's about sort of like your journey on the earth and how you affect other people, and it's a good end of the year sort of poignant movie. I didn't give you like all bubblegum and popcorn.
No, I know. I'm not going to watch, with all due respect, Matthew, film guy, some darkness at the end of the year. I'm not going to do that. I'm just not going to do it.
Can I
my emotional state is too fragile. I'm not going to do that.
Oh no.
Yeah, but it's, damn,
die.
It's not. You see, this is the problem. This is the problem with confronting death. We're so afraid of it. We resist it so much, and all of our problems come from that resistance. Once you give in, and even just for 2 hours in another context, somebody else's life, even just doing that, you'll find it's actually freeing. It's actually energizing.
I'm okay with giving in to death. I'm just not going to watch that movie.
Did you see that?
I may watch it. I get on my list.
One of the great President Show segments when that show was on. Deepak Chopra
into the water.
Yeah. Deepak Chopra takes him through this like meditative regression into his subconscious. And he realizes end that like the young woman that he's trying to grope is actually the old crone, but he really is the old crone. And he breaks down and he goes through this horror, and then he cries and he realizes that all we want is love. And then he comes out of it, and Deepak is like, "What did you learn?" And he's just like, "Nothing." He goes right back to it.
That's Sam after he watches Amour.
Exactly. Well, guys,
thank you so much for these end of the year suggestions. Thank you so much for coming on the show in 2018. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to reading Isabel's book. Maybe I might go up to the 92nd Y.
Come on.
I might do that.
Good times.
You can do stuff like that now, dude.
I can do that.
You can go to places and be a human being.
I can do that. I can go out. I mean, it depends on if I have the kids or not.
Can I give a brief recommendation?
What, for a movie?
Yeah.
All right. Very important. Very brief.
It's important. So today is...
TMBS. It's playing.
Yeah, just watch TMBS. Thank you, Sam. You know what? We did an illicit history on this person. I wasn't even going to plug it until you did that.
There you go.
Thomas Sankara would have been 69 years old today, and he was an African revolutionary who ran Burkina Faso in the early 80s. He changed the name of the country, which means land of upright men. Anyways, he did incredible things on the environment, women's rights. He was deposed of in a coup backed by the French. And there's an amazing French documentary with an incredible, like, one of those very old school good, like, BBC documentary voices on YouTube. And it's only 50 minutes. It's a biography, and it's called Land of Upright Men. I would check it out.
That's another person we should
all be admiring and thinking about. They call them the African Che.
Anybody got anything else you want to say? All right. No, we didn't plan to have all recommendations.
Spring Breakers was a late capitalist masterpiece, and I will die on that hill.
Spring Breakers. All right.
I love Spring Breakers. I was down with that movie.
I would also
say
Analyze This.
I don't even know what that is. Spring Breakers.
Billy Crystal.
That
and
was
De
Harmony
Niro.
Korine's most recent movie.
Deuce Bigelow.
Guys.
Yeah, Deuce Bigelow.
Deuce Bigelow.
I think
great.
Brendan's got one.
Brendan.
I've really been enjoying Escape at Dannemora with Paul Dano and Benicio Del Toro
about the
prison break in 2013 in upstate New York.
That's
really
on Showtime.
It's ongoing.
What is it called?
It's on Showtime.
Escape at Dannemora.
Escape. Oh, well, it's on Showtime.
It's directed by Ben Stiller, and he's doing a really good job.
Ooh,
and
wow. Really? Wait, it's a TV show? One more time?
Yeah, Escape at Dannemora. And Patricia Arquette, actually, too. I'm sorry I left her out of it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, well, it's a star-studded cast.
Speaking of Ben Stiller.
I might watch that this afternoon.
I'd recommend it.
I've watched the entire trilogy now of Night at the Museum and highly recommend it.
all right, guys. That definitely makes me want to contemplate death.
Yes, indeed.
Wait, I have one more. What
do you got?
If you want to go to the movie theater. I really do. It's called Can You Ever Forgive Me? And it's the Liz McCarthy and Richard E. Grant movie, and it is so good.
All right. Can you ever forgive me?
Did I
all
get
right.
cut off? Can you ever forgive me? It's so, so, so beautiful and good.
All right. Isabel, Matthew, thank you so much. Have a wonderful Christmas or a holiday celebration, Equinox, the New Year's. Kwanzaa
2019
we Thank only you, can, things can only get better, but I don't actually believe that let's hold on to that hope springs eternal in 2019, let's put it that way. All right, guys, thank you so much.
That was, I forget the band, but that was when Tony Blair first ran for prime minister in 97. That was the theme song of his campaign, was this really obnoxious pop song, and it was Things Can Only Get Better.
There you go. all right, well, should we just do a Freebie Friday? Let's just do a Freebie Friday.
Yes.
All right, Freebie
Whatever
Friday.
Way.
Just remember, though, folks, it's your support that makes this show possible. Just head over to jointhemajorityreport.com. TMBS, check it out. Sign up on the YouTube channel or Patreon. Same with patreon.com, The Intifada, and Literary Hangover. Check out all that stuff.
Bell House Show.
Oh,
get your tickets.
Yes, you can get your tickets at majority.fm. And so let's just go. Let's just roll right into this to the fun half, I guess. Well, this is not going to be fun. This Christian Nielsen, she is the head of the Department of Homeland Security, you know, and like. She's a bad person. And we were told John Kelly was going to be the adult who was going to take care of Donald Trump and this and that. And the same thing with Mattis and whatnot. And like I say, the jury is still out as to whether Mattis was preventing us from getting into a nuclear winter. And if we end up if Donald Trump ends up dropping a nuke or accidentally drops one on us, then I'm going to say, you know, Mattis, good for you. You did a good job for those first 2 years, but maybe you shouldn't have quit. But the bottom line is, really, if you take a job in this administration, it is a very significant piece of evidence toward the assertion that you are a horrible human being.
Should never be employable again.
Oh, without a doubt.
Not even TV jobs.
Without
a
doubt.
Not employable.
But I mean, as we have multiple positions, major positions in this administration to fill, just keep in mind that the people who will say yes to serving in this administration, there is really no benefit of doubt that you should be giving them. They are probably horrible human beings. But if you had any question as to the horror that someone like Christian Nielsen represents, let us dispel that notion that you have there. Here is Congressman David Cicilline from Rhode Island. And just, this is coming. She's going in front of Congress days after a seven-year-old died in their custody. The Customs and Border Patrol died in their custody. We still don't know the real story because the parents are telling a different story than what we heard from Customs. I'm quite convinced that this story is going to get worse. It's already pretty bad. You take a seven-year-old into custody, you should check them out to make sure that they're healthy. They shouldn't 7 hours later have a 105-degree temperature and going into basically into shock. Here is the congressman talking to Chris Nielsen.
5 minutes. Thank you. Madam Secretary, did I understand you correctly to say that as you sit here today, you do not know how many human beings have died while in the custody of the department that you lead? And you, in preparation for today's hearing, you didn't ascertain that number, but you don't know it today?
I don't have an exact figure for you.
Do you have a rough idea?
Sir, what I can tell you
I'm
is...
I'm talking about people who have died in your custody. You don't have the number?
I will get back to you with the number.
Okay. You've also said, in talking about the Flores decision, that it's a loophole. And in your written testimony, you called it...
Pause it for 1 second. I just want to make sure everyone understands what the Flores decision is and the agreement. It was an agreement that a judge fashioned based upon a lawsuit that was brought on behalf of immigrants who were being held by the U.S. government. And it is an agreement, essentially, that you cannot hold children beyond a certain period of time, even with their parents, and that you cannot separate children from their parents. Continue.
And in your written testimony, you called it burdensome court opinions. You do recognize that those opinions are based on constitutional protections, do you not?
The reference in the testimony was to a whole variety of court cases.
I'm talking about your written testimony where you spoke about Flores as a burdensome court opinion. Those may impose some burdens on you because the Constitution protects liberty and puts limitations on whether government can detain people.
Sir, the Constitution does not say that families can only be detained for 20 days.
That's what the Flores decision says. But it's based on the Constitution. Is it not? And it's law that you're required to
pause
follow.
Pause it. The Constitution does not say a lot of things. It doesn't say anything about a border. It doesn't say anything about a border patrol. It doesn't say anything about Department of Homeland Security. It doesn't say a whole host of things. But it does say cruel and inhuman punishment, not allowed. It does say you cannot hold people indefinitely without some type of specific charges. It does say equal protection. There's a whole host of things that the Constitution says that, as the congressman says, the Flores decision was developed based upon. Go back just a little bit.
A limitations on whether government can detain people.
Sir, the Constitution does not say that families can only be detained for 20 days.
That's what the Flores decision says. It's based on the Constitution. Is it not? And it's law that you're required to follow. Correct? You took an oath.
The Flores settlement.
Are you required to follow that?
Would you like me to answer the question,
yes,
or you want
like
to just yell at me? Because it's up to you.
I'm asking you.
And I'm trying to answer it. So would you like to hear it?
That you respect and honor in the work of the department. That's a yes or a no.
The Flores settlement requires us to write a regulation, which we have, and it's out for public comment. We are following the law to the letter.
Thank you, Madam Secretary.
There you go. The idea that people would get offended that she doesn't have the ability to eat at fancy restaurants without being, you know, without worrying about being criticized is just ridiculous.
Wherever this woman goes, she should, you know, people should, in a, you know, totally legal, respecting of her physical space way, totally legal, totally cool way, tell her what they think of her.
Yeah.
Which is that she's a disgusting, despicable, grotesque, evil, inhumane, disgrace to humanity.
I'm thinking like a GoFundMe that pays for a guy with a tuba just to follow her around and play oompa music just to announce horrible human being coming through town square.
Just go and you say it's perfectly cool, perfectly legal. You're a horrible, disgusting person. You should go live in a monastery and repent for decades.
This was also, and you know, what's going to be interesting about this is this is the Democrats in the minority. When they become the chairs of these committees and can start compelling subpoenas and whatnot, this is going to get even more interesting.
That alone. Another one, we always look for these like little margins that show you like worth it.
Yeah.
Worth it.
Here's Ted Lieu, Congressman Ted Lieu from California, explaining to Kristen Nielsen that she is full of crap. And the entire argument that somehow we are in a this nation is experiencing a crisis of immigration is completely false.
I would just appreciate if you started telling the truth to American people about the policy of family separation.
So again, sir, I would
that was not a question. That was just a, you can answer
okay.
After I'm done.
No problem. If you'd like to just give a speech, I'll just let me know when you're done.
I'm going to ask you some questions now.
Wonderful.
So during your opening statement, you sort of painted this dark picture of this crisis at the border and there was crime and so on. Are you aware that in 2017, violent crime rates dropped?
Across the country or
yes,
in a particular
country.
Other country? Or
FBI report. Have you read it? It says violent crime rates dropped in 2017. Are you aware of that?
I have no reason to dispute the FBI.
Same report also says property crime rates dropped in 2017, according to that same report. Are you aware of that?
I have no reason to dispute the FBI.
Are you aware of the numerous reports that say immigrants, both documented and undocumented, commit less crimes than native-born Americans? Are you aware of those studies?
I have not seen those particular studies.
Right. So I'd like you to go or have your staff show you the Cato Institute study from 2014 that showed all immigrants are less likely to be incarcerated than native-born Americans relative to their share of the population. There's been a Public Policy Institute of California study that also showed that the foreign-born, who make about 35% of the adult population in California, constitute only about 17% of the adult prison population. So just be helpful if you start putting in some basic facts about the actual facts related to immigrants and crime. And then I'm just going to conclude by quoting from Congressman Will Hurd, who said essentially in a Washington Post op-ed that building a wall will be the most expensive and least effective way to secure the border.
There you go. Kristen Nielsen having a little learning annex class on the facts that
another
that they
surly brat,
completely.
Just
oh,
like
yeah.
All these other people.
She is there. The indignant quality of these people is fascinating.
Look, if you just want to grandstand about our recklessly negligence leading to the death of a 7-year-old, go right ahead.
Yeah, she's Stephen Miller with better hair.
The best Barely. Defense is a good offense,
best
I guess.
Best defense is sullen racism and self-pity.
Yeah. We can hate the player and the game, folks. It's a bad system. These problems are structural. Also, these people are very bad people.
Horrible.
Both things can be true.
Horrible human beings. Let's just play one more clip from that, because it is the case that Kristen Nielsen is a horrible human being. But Louis Gohmert wants to get in on this and also remind everybody that, Kristen, not only are you a human being, but I'm also one of the dumbest people in Congress. So let me just have the opportunity to say that.
So let me just state, for those who are not aware, since I've worked in most areas of our criminal justice system, parents are separated from children every single day of every year, year after year. When a parent, when there's probable cause to believe a parent has committed a crime, I've signed countless warrants. Judges all over the country do it every day, and parents who have probable cause they committed a crime are separated from their children, and those are usually U.S. citizens. It's what happens when a parent is believed to have committed a crime.
Pause it. Mueller. They, none of these parents who have been separated from their children, that what he just stated was the case. And during the Obama administration, if a parent came in and they found that they were basically had a suitcase full of drugs, or if there was a weapon, or if there was something like that, and there was some reason, there was probable cause, and or that the parent had committed a crime, the children would be separated from the parent. But that's not what happened at the border. There was no probable cause. Not whatsoever. They changed the law to simply say, we're going to just establish, if you show up, that is in and of itself probable cause. They just changed the law. They changed the regulation. But here he is going to bring this one home.
It's what happens when a parent is believed to have committed a crime. Mueller did it, and I know he's a hero to some folks around here. He did it to Manafort, separated him from his two beautiful children. It happens. Now,
There you go. Louis Gohmert wants to say, just in case it's not disgusting enough, your policies and what you've done to children and the 14,000-plus children that you're housing and the parents that were separated from little tiny children for no reason, let me just remind you that the president of the United States, his campaign manager, had to give up $49 million worth of his funds and is in jail because he's a liar and a criminal.
People forget.
So I just want to forget.
I guess a lot of these people think it would be great that John Gotti died of lung cancer in prison without being near his kid.
It's not just that you're a horrible person, but we're all protecting someone who's, probably involved in a heavy criminal enterprise. I just want to remind you here that during this hearing.
I like how these people become prison abolitionists all of a sudden when one of theirs in trouble. Like,
of course.
Do you think he would say the same thing about all the black people in jail based on racist drug laws?
Oh, yeah. He would totally say that.
Sure. My bet would be no.
Louis Gohmert is a longtime critic of the racist nature of criminal sentencing in this country.
Let's go to the phones. Calling from a 509 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Sam, Merry Christmas.
Oh, well, thank you, Ronald Reagan.
Reagan.
I do not celebrate Christmas, but thank you.
Shots fired. Celebrate that we can say it now.
What's that?
You should celebrate that we can say it now, at least.
It is.
Freedom feels good. Free.
I appreciate you expressing your freedom to say
open
that.
A.
But to you, my understanding is that you may celebrate Christmas.
Isn't it weird?
Merry Christmas.
Isn't it weird that Trump hasn't mentioned Christmas all month, but he was bragging about it like in June?
That is true.
That's kind of weird.
It is sort of weird because he was talking about it over the summer, and he's been distracted.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, so a couple things. Like, it's true that if you arrest somebody for a misdemeanor, like, you can take their kids away, but like, just because a thing can happen doesn't mean that it should happen. So if a cop pulls over a mother with four kids in the car, and like some of them are in diapers or whatever, and the cop finds out she's got a suspended license and it's a misdemeanor, but he looks it over and, you know, she's not a dangerous criminal, she's just got a suspended license. He can still issue the citation or not issue the citation and let her go because her like poopy 2-year-old kid is in the back crying. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Law enforcement makes those calls all the time. And it would be absurd if your local city police were like, you know what? Fuck that. We're going to arrest all of these people no matter what for any type of misdemeanor. Which is what they did at the border. They said, you know, if you're caught entering illegally, which is technically a federal misdemeanor, then we will prosecute you to the full extent of the law, which means detaining you, which would mean, you know, separating you from your kids or whatever. So that, I mean, all of that is a choice. And that actually brings me to the point I wanted to make, which is you played the clip of the guy, the congressman, I don't know his name, but he asked how many people have died on your watch, which is a great question. And then he totally bails her out like 5 minutes in. He says, you know, my anger is not directed at you. It's directed at this nebulous, quote unquote, system or, you know, whatever is happening. And he gives her a total out. And this is what happens over and over again from the local level. And she's the director of the agency.
Right.
And that's how all of these people sleep at night. You know, I've got this client with six kids and she's been detained for 2 months. She's got a 4-month-old baby, and I've been spending the last 2 months begging ICE to just let her out, which they can do. They do it all the time. But every time I talk to one of the officers, it's like, well, you know, we have to, as if they're not people who have authority to make choices. And they do. And the law allows for those choices. And you have to hold those people accountable no matter what level they're at, but especially the director of the agency. So to, you know, to ask all these great questions, like you don't even know how many people have died in your custody. That's unbelievable. And then at the end to say, I'm not really mad at you. Like, what the hell?
Right.
You should be. You should be very mad at her. You should be investigating her.
I am enraged at the process and you. Like, I'm enraged at both, and you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
You should,
they're not.
If you don't know that stat, you shouldn't be sitting here. You should be resigned.
They were
You're
just
disgusting.
Following orders, right?
Yeah, and you know, there's two aspects of that following orders, right? It's one where you don't have the moral courage to say this order is inhumane and I shouldn't follow it. But then it's also like, you know, this scenario where it just becomes a cover for doing just cruel things when in fact you do have the discretion. I mean, you don't need to
she
be.
She actually chose that path.
Yep.
She wasn't subject to, you know, some higher
I agree
authority.
With you. And I think this is a problem. I think there's a problem all up and down the line in terms of holding anybody who supports this administration, particularly in Congress and in the Senate, to account, and anybody who executes their decisions. Like, you know, the days of us saying like, well, they're adults, they're keeping them under control, but they're doing all this stuff, like, that's, you know, that was the Whitey Bulger excuse, right? Like, he's out there, he's giving us information. Yeah, he's killing some people. He's killing some people. But what are you going to do?
People are going to die anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's bound to happen.
People die. Don't
At least we're getting information.
Don't be so innocent.
Yeah, no, I agree. But
anyways. Well, thanks, guys. Have a good year.
Ronald Reagan,
thank you.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Thanks so much for your participation this year. I really appreciate it.
The way they treated Whitey Bulger was a disgrace. He got killed in a federal prison after he did so much.
So much good.
So much good. It was so unfair.
Calling from a 267 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, is this M&R Appliance? I was just calling to say that my washer and dryer, they're going all wobbly.
and my dishwasher refuses to work, and my smart bidet is just singing "Solidarity Forever" the whole of one day.
Nice.
I don't get it.
That's a joke about the IWW, also known as the Wobblies. Very radical union with a long history that you can learn about on a recent episode of the Antifada. This was crossover with Pod Day America.
Oh, I get it. Hey, Sean, how's it going?
All right. Hey, Fran from Philadelphia.
Fran from Philadelphia.
I appreciated it.
Hey, thanks, Jamie. I just wanted to call and give kind of a little bit of an update on Philly regional politics. The first one about that touches federally is on net neutrality. I think it's the case that the opportunity to use the Congressional Review Act to reverse the FCC net neutrality rollback, I think that window expires today.
Yes.
And there was, you know, a gap of like 37 votes that was needed.
Yeah.
So Mary Gay Scanlon, who was just elected to PA's fifth in the redistricting, had some pressure put on her by net neutrality activists because she was wouldn't sign on to it. She was one of these 17 Dems who had taken money from ISPs and wouldn't sign on to it. Just about Mary Gay Scanlon, she has these good progressive bona fides on paper, but she's an interesting example of how integrated people who work in the public interest, especially in the legal community, are with the business community, and how that makes some more systemic changes much more difficult. So Mary Gay Scanlon, her husband is Mark Stewart, who's the chair of a firm called Ballard Spahr. And Ballard Spahr did a lot of work for Comcast.
Let's do the broad strokes. I mean, because it's the final day of 2018, and to get into the sort of like the granular aspects of this. But I mean, broad strokes, I think you
Fair
have
enough.
An interesting
anyway,
point.
She responded to pressure. She responded to pressure. And she said she would sign on to it. But, of course, it's a kind of a meaningless gesture because her response means nothing.
Right.
In any event, it's, you know, it's something to watch out for Mary Gay Scanlon.
All right.
And it's just funny because, like, both of those buildings are right by me. The other two things, Krasner and the Philly Work Week, just the Philly Work Week first, that got passed. The Fair Work Week got passed by City Council in Philadelphia. So it the $15 minimum wage and predictable scheduling for certain classes of employees, mostly in service work. That makes Philadelphia, I think, that like the second large city in the nation to have that.
Sweet.
And then last thing, Krasner.
Yep.
Interesting thing, like Krasner right now is at some odds with kind of from within, because apparently there are, even though this ICE contract was no longer renewed, there are still people kind of within the police department who are still voluntarily sharing data with
ICE. That's unbelievable.
So
it's authoritarian mindset.
And, you know, there are other things too. Like the other sort of pressure on him is that, you know, Philadelphia's crime rate is up 16% from last year. Murder rate. You know, much of that is attributed apparently to Kensington and North Philadelphia, where there's basically an open air drug market. And then the last thing, he's also at odds with a Trump appointee, William M. McSwain,
U.S. attorney
who is basically trying to step in spots, in one spot in particular where someone maybe in Krasner's office like messed up with a plea deal, or maybe I'm mixing up two things, but he's basically trying to say the sentencing wasn't harsh enough.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, long and short of this,
the federal government, the Justice Department. Yeah, yeah.
All right, because I'm going to jump because we don't have much time left.
Can I ask him one question?
No, I got to jump. But here's the thing: people need to. I'm sorry. I got 15 minutes left of the entire year. I can't spend the whole time on Philadelphia politics. But people need to support good politicians who get in. You need to do that year long. We can talk in a week, but I want to get through a couple of people. Sorry. Calling from a 617 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Ben from Chicago.
Ben from Chicago. Got to be quick.
Michael, I was wondering, how familiar are you with the, water wars in Cochabamba, Bolivia? In the early 2000s.
I'm familiar. I promise an illicit history on it, and so Sam doesn't have an aneurysm. I'll leave it at that.
All right, thanks. I appreciate the call.
Okay.
But that was awesome, actually.
Come from a 510 area code. Who's this?
Valuable troll. Yes, and you can't give Sam an aneurysm and ask a good question. It's a complimentary goal.
510 area code. Who's this?
Hey, hang on. Hey, guys, gals, everybody, happy solstice.
Thank you. Got to be quick.
Equinox is another 90 days.
Oh, all right. Well, solstice. Sorry about that.
I hang up on him.
Hey.
Click.
Can I just ask you one thing? I've got a friend who is Republican, but we can actually talk. Oh, and her main concern about everybody voting is that then the cities would overpower the rural areas. I don't understand how to explain what that means for her, except that she's trying to have her vote count way more than other people. But do you have any other ideas for how to talk to somebody about that?
Math, I would say. I would just say, like, introduce her to math.
They already do. People in rural areas votes count more per person.
No, that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
But he's trying to explain to her why, you know, the idea of cities overpowering rural, that's...
Right.
Sadly, a function of democracy, if she will accept that that we shouldn't have that democracy, why is she stopping at even letting anybody vote?
I wouldn't ask that to a Republican.
No, but I'm saying, like, you know,
that's
listen,
like, that's a good point.
That's the dynamic she's talking about. But the reality is too is that. You know, things like the postal office, who's supporting that? That is about rural voters. I mean, there is the idea that somehow the rural people are getting some type of benefit out of Republicans. Well, I don't see any evidence of that.
No, they're sure not. Rural America has massive problems of inequality and I mean, all the things we already know. And so tell her to look at it from, you know,
it's a heavy
tell
lift. You, I got
to
tell
you. But if you reshift to economics,
I'm curious
from
as to what the euphemism the cities mean.
Oh,
because,
do we even have a question?
Well, but.
Yeah, I want to go down that road with her for sure. And obviously also the blue areas tend to subsidize the red areas. But
would it be cool
I think
if it
delicate.
Was actually
rural America is a colonial project.
Wouldn't it be cool if it was actually just like Italians instead of blacks? She's like, well, the blacks were oppressed, but you know what? The Italians, they run all the goddamn cities.
It used to be
some like old school racism.
Used to
that's
be
totally antiquated.
Used to be.
I like that, Dr. King.
Maybe she's still at that stage.
All right. Yeah. Well,
oh,
good
the
luck.
Genovese family the tells me.
Appreciate the call.
Farm.
Appreciate it. All right. This is actually interesting. I want to just cover this. Do we have the Kilmeade with the number one? This is actually interesting exchange here. The, you know, just as on the left, we, you know, there's I don't want to say there's a dilemma, but you know, it is I think for me personally, net, it's a good thing that we're pulling out of Afghanistan, or at least half our troops, certainly, and a good thing that we're pulling our troops out of Syria. I would have done it maybe differently. And yeah, well, I mean, that's the point, is that, you know, try and get something for it, maybe protect people who were our allies. But for the right, they have their dilemma, too, because they... they really want more war, and they don't want ISIS to be refounded.
He's giving Russia a big win. Vladimir Putin praised him. He also is doing exactly what he criticized.
Pause it. I guess I should say this is the Fox and Friends, and Kilmeade is talking to Sarah Sanders. And Sarah Sanders, I think, gets like sort of sideswiped by this.
I got to
like,
give a little context.
I thought you were my friend.
We played two clips of Kilmeade yesterday.
Off the reservation.
Ranting
about this. That's not an appropriate term. But he was
ranting about this. Like, it's very, I mean, in a very weird way, he's a warmonger. Although what he said about the Kurds, I agree with. But he's a ridiculous warmonger. But in a weird way, because all the rest of them, it's so transparent that they're just like the flavor of the month. He's the only one, even though he's wrong, that actually takes this stuff somewhat seriously. It's
right.
Something other than just a daily shifting talking point
right.
of whether or not we kill people in
right.
foreign countries.
Right. Deucey's like, I'm willing to do it either way. Yeah. Just,
you know, literally. Like, just, oh, that was the Bush era,
just
Brian.
Make sure, just
now
make
we're
sure,
isolationists.
Just make sure I get the script 5 minutes beforehand. And I'm going to be there no matter what you need. And just, oh, also, I love those chocolate frosted donuts. Can we get those too?
Literally. Okay. And then Kilmeade
is
weirdly earnest.
Yeah, exactly.
He's giving Russia a big win. Vladimir Putin praised him. He also is doing exactly what he criticized President Obama for doing. He said President Obama is the founder of ISIS. He just refounded ISIS because he got 30,000 men there, and they're already striking back with our would-be evacuation. The president's got it. He's really on the griddle with this.
Brian,
on the what?
Brian, I have to respectfully and vehemently disagree with you. The idea that the president has had anything to do with helping ISIS reemerge is absolutely outrageous.
Leaving is
the
helping.
President has put so much emphasis on rebuilding and making sure we have the strongest military on the face of the planet. If ISIS wants to pick a fight with somebody, they sure as heck don't want to pick one with Donald Trump because he will destroy them and defeat them. And he's made that extremely clear. We've wiped out 99% of ISIS in Syria. The president doesn't want to be in the middle of a civil war in the Middle East and continue to put American lives on the line.
Words
if
are,
we need to fight ISIS
the
again,
is
the president's not
said.
Afraid to do that.
All right, Sarah, thank you so much. We wish you a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much.
You're Merry welcome. Christmas, guys.
Oh, he doesn't even say thank you. He's mad. He's
Dude,
mad.
Kilmeade is going to be – he's an Obama-man. He's a interventionist who's also the least racist of them. Remember like when Lindsey Graham's like, well, you know what the Persians are like? And Kilmeade's like, well, not all Persians, only their government. That's
right.
Really not very enlightened. Anyways, we're pulling out from the Middle East when we need to fight. He's second term. He's a 2011
I mean,
Obama.
I think that is also the least accurate critique. Because
ridiculous.
The Russians and Assad are going to be, continue to kill these people.
Oh, without a doubt.
And the 2,000 military personnel that we had there are not going to be terribly missed. The issue is going to be more about the Kurds and
well, the Turks
and protect.
And the Russians did this, by the way, in Afrin last year. They did this. They had a deal with the Kurds. They sold the Kurds out. They left. And Turkey did this. They ethnically cleansed and mass murdered Afrin. We already have seen this. The Turkish military spokesperson said last week, we're going to go ditch to ditch.
Yeah, that we're going to eliminate these people.
Exactly that far, you know, that's.
Jonathan Armstead, Sam, thanks for you and the crew for all you do this year. Can I make a vote for the caller of the year, old man racist? I haven't laughed that hard at the follies of a racist white guy since Archie Bunker was canceled. Bop, bop, bop.
I think Archie Bunker was a nice
I think
guy.
We've already assembled that stuff, right? Yeah, it's a little late. I love Sarah Palin. To piggyback on what Matthew said about death, that's a great speech at the end of Belly about death that the Reverend gives when DMX comes to kill him.
That's true. It's a great movie. Nas goes to Africa. Spoilers.
What movie? At Belly?
Belly. I'm surprised you weren't involved in that.
JJ Cool. I was planning.
You weren't cast in Belly? You weren't like a lawyer or something?
Belly?
That would be amazing. It's like Hype Williams, Nas, DMX, and Sam Cedar.
I want to see Sam and DMX in the same show.
If the show had lasted,
yeah, you would have been.
That's the guy I would have been.
You're not hiding enough. You're putting it out in the street. It's too much heat, DMX.
Just play it cool. Lay low. What is it that you guys say on the street about that? Just be cool, man.
Just be cool,
be
man.
Cool.
JJ Cool. I was planning to catch up on TMBS this weekend, but then I was bombarded with movie recommendations. Maybe next year. Happy holidays. A Square. And Mark Crew, in case I can't get my annual year-end call, thanks as always for the wit, sarcasm, knowledge, insights, analysis, but most of all for believing there's a more progressive world that we can fashion for ourselves and our children. Happy holidays and a healthy and prosperous new year. See you in Brooklyn on the 13th.
Oh, sweet.
Country Bumpkin. Sam, last year at this time, many on the left, including you, were saying it was okay to give Trump money for the wall if he kept the government open. No, 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 no. Not the government open for DACA legislation and DAPA legislation. Not for the government open. The idea being it was unfeasible anyways. What changed? I'm surprised to see this line is completely thought. It has vanished. No, because the deal on the table was supposedly wall for DACA, or possibly. That's what changed. Colin from Nebraska. Santa busting out clean coal this Christmas fast show. You, Sam, I listened to Al Franken's interview with David Frum and found it interesting. I'm beginning to see the value in never Trumpers like Frum. Am I mixed up? I haven't listened to it, but I would suggest yes.
Yes.
Train boy. Who is Stephen Miller reporting to? If my memory serves, he was a Sessions guy dating back to when Sessions was in the Senate. Shouldn't he be gone? Yeah, I know. It's very strange.
He weaseled his way to the top.
On a lighter
note.
That's
been his play from the beginning.
Many, many thanks to everyone involved in MR and affiliate shows. You kept me informed, entertained, and sane during these awful times. Winnipeg Craig, Sam's just mad at Jason Bateman because he thought he could have been the star of Arrested Development. In fact, I did audition for that. I've told that story, right? Where the guy started grilling me about Benjamin. I'll tell that maybe in 2019.
I have not heard that story.
Oh, yeah.
Told the new year.
Max in Phoenix, what do you think of Marlene Williamson's possible presidential candidacy?
Who's that? Oh, Marianne Williamson?
Yeah.
She writes nice books.
Marianne Williamson.
I'm not.
Bullprog, it's really uncomfortable being in this current situation as progressive. Trump's dumb decisions are bad enough, but then you've got the dumb left anti-war crowd looking at Doran Kolinsky, cheering it on with zero nuance or foresight. And we're left to defend continuing operations. My head hurts. Brock, well, you don't have to defend continuing operations.
Just do direct solidarity with the Kurds.
Brock from VA. Hey, MR crew, wondering if Nation of Islam Obama is looking forward to white genocide Christmas.
White genocide is so passe. We've got new terms now. You don't fool me, white boy.
George
Hipster racist.
W.
Fuck out of here.
Kush. With regard to things that have been said over the year, if YouTube keeps violating your freedom of speech by not monetizing your videos, we should start a leftist YouTube, call it RedTube. Con. Hey, Sam. So thank you for the thankful for the show and everyone on the MR crew. Can I get a shofar for my brother Kevin's birthday? Sure. End of the year. DX Fool. Hi, folks, and happy new year. Once again, Sam neglects to mention to Isabel that he replaced Judy Gold on the final episode of Margaret Cho's first sitcom. As for things to cover up like Stephen Miller's scalp, I think Sam should resolve in the new year to stop stuttering and stammering on Ring of Fire, since time is money and Digby needs to get a word in now and then. Jamie should resolve to change her cadence. I mean, she sounds fine on her own podcast, but here she's like ready to pick a fight all the time. Or is that Hotford? Oh, Hotford accent. And Hotford. And chill and have some ketamine. Okay, Peaches, and fix the damn IM signaler. Boy, there's a lot of...
Oh, I thought you were only reading nice ones.
Scott from California, it's my birthday. Can I get a Jew horn? Last one of the season. All right, folks, I'm sorry I got a ton of callers on the phone, but somebody's got to catch a plane. At least two people do. All right, folks, have a great new year. Merry Christmas if you celebrate. Happy holiday. Happy Kwanzaa. Thank you so much. Thank you, Michael and Jamie and Matt and Brendan. You guys have done an amazing job this year, and very happy with the success for your respective shows.
Oh, thank you.
Brendan, I'm sorry. Maybe 2019 is the year.
Fish pod is coming.
There you go. And
wow, subtweet.
Nice. And
Looking forward to 2019. Thank you so much for your support. You're an incredible audience, and very gratifying. Thank you for all the emails and whatnot. 2019, looking to up our game in terms of like audio quality and engagement and all sorts of things. So thank you, and thank you for the personal support you guys have given me. 2018 was a fairly tumultuous year for me, you know, in my personal life, and I appreciate the support. And we will see you in 2019. Monday will be a new show. It won't be live, but it's pre-recorded. A look back on 2018 with Alex Perrine, and sort of just a general topic. And then we've got, over the next 6 days, we have five great best of shows for you, and we made them all free, unlocked all of them. So enjoy. We'll see you January 2nd, Wednesday, in 2019. Holy crap. See you then. It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in it.